Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the Whence Came You podcast. This is episode number 427. Get ready for a whole year of 50 episodes of the Whence Came You podcast. I just want to say I hope everybody out there had a wonderful holiday season and a great new year. This week on the program, I've got a two-part paper as well as a singular piece, which we shared on the Midnight Freemasons a few weeks back. And I've also got kind of a mail call segment and some general news. So first up is the news. I want to share with everybody that we went ahead and launched Laudable Pursuit on Audible.com. Chris Hodapp actually just shared his article just recently that it is out and available. So what I'll say here in brief is that in 2019, I contacted Chris Hodapp about putting Laudable Pursuit on Audible. He was immediately on board. It was personal because myself, along with 20 other dudes that used this book as a means to start a whole new lodge, right? And we were successful. And so as part of a tribute to Chris and the others, the Knights of the North, we completed this audio version of Laudable Pursuit. The book gave so much to us, and we wanted to be able to give back. So with Chris narrating alongside some other members of my lodge, Scott Duball, who is our worshipful master, Spencer Hammond, who is our senior warden, and Julian Rojas, who is our junior warden. And the thing was, you know, I'm no stranger to recording. However, I'm not like mega professional. But I know who is our brother of Space Novum, Adam Hassel, who directed and engineered all of the audio for this particular book. And so it was a lodge project. It was really cool to be able to do. And Spencer played some original music for it. We did the whole nine yards for this production of about 90 minutes or so. And you can get it on Audible right now. It's $6.95, or it's free with a trial. And the reason why I wanted to tell you about it is because, as Chris has requested, that all proceeds of this book, I asked him, where do you want the proceeds to go? And he said to the Indiana Library and Museum, the Masonic Library and Museum, which is where he has donated all the book sales for Laudable Pursuit in the past. So we're keeping in line with that. All of the proceeds for the sale of this book go back to the Indiana Library and Museum. So please check that out. Again, it's free if you do a trial, and rate it. Rate the book when you're all done. Let us know how you felt about it. You know, you're nobody until you get a one-star rating, so It's Business Time has a one-star rating somewhere. But check that out. You can find a direct link to it if you go to wcypodcast.com, click on Limited Edition Shop, and scroll down to the bottom, and I've got a link right there, Laudable Pursuit on audiobook. I want to get into the mail call segment here. Now, what happens in mail call is essentially I receive tons of Masonic news, mail, magazines, and the like every single month, and it takes me a while to get through it, and I don't get to read everything that I want to read. I get real selective about what I have to read. But there are a couple things that I do want to read to you, and a couple things I do want to mention. First, going through some of my materials here, I may have mentioned it before, but Robert Marshall from Texas Waco Lodge actually did a piece on Tranquility Lodge 2000 for the Philalethes magazine not too long ago. So if you haven't picked that issue up, do that. It's a great issue. His article is really nice, but what I really wanted to focus on, and I guess this is going to be a few minutes as far as the segment goes, is the Landmark Century campaign. I got this in the mail. It's for the George Washington Masonic National Memorial, and we've been fortunate enough to do some events at the Masonic Memorial. I've gone to lodge there. If you have ever gone there, the tour guides know a ton. Most of the guys who are tour guides there have become Masons or are in the process of becoming a Mason. The building itself is astounding. You have got to go. It is free, but they do take suggested donations, I think, at the front. And you wouldn't believe the sheer size of the hall once you get inside. And perhaps if you're a Mason, then you may know. If you're not, this may be news to you, but every time a Master Mason is raised somewhere in the United States, typically Grand Lodge will have some sort of a fund written into their bylaws that say, for every Master Mason you raise, you owe $5 to the George Washington National Masonic Memorial. And Illinois, we pay $5, and I think our lodge doubles it to 10 or something like that. But the point is, everybody is trying to pool together money to donate to the memorial because it needs assistance and upkeep and all of that. And so I contacted Brother Sean Iyer, and I said, hey, Sean, who works there, I said, is it possible, can I read some of this piece of mail on the show to raise a little bit of awareness for it? And he said, absolutely. So I'd like to do just a little bit of that now. I'm going to strategically read a couple paragraphs out of this mailing in the hopes that you will check it out yourself, and I'll post some links in the show notes for you also. But in short, let's just answer a couple questions. First of all, let's give you the background on the landmark itself. So on August 4th, 2015, on the 262nd anniversary of George Washington's raising to the sublime degree of a Master Mason, the Secretary of the Interior announced that the George Washington Masonic National Memorial was designated as a National Historic Landmark. So by this action, the National Park Service recognized the memorial's unique identity as the only major, unified, fully national initiative of the Freemasons, and amongst the boldest attempts by private organization to memorialize George Washington. Now, the Century Campaign is this. Between 1910 and 1932, the Freemasons of the United States of America came together at all levels to build the memorial, grand lodges and national bodies, local lodges and organizations, and individual Masons. Now, we ask for your help in ensuring that the memorial is prepared for the next century. Many of our projects to return the memorial to its full luster and glory have been accomplished, but it's time for us to seek your support to complete the work. Critical funds must be raised for the restoration efforts to be finalized in time for the anniversary of our cornerstone laying nearly a century ago. So they have a little update on the progress. In February of 2018, the restoration of the famous cornerstone mural in the Memorial Hall was completed. The mural was returned to its place of honor and now, fully repaired and conserved, is being enjoyed by all visitors to the memorial. The memorial's ongoing restoration work is being carried out in three major areas. The third and fourth floor exterior stonework of the tower, continued improvements to Memorial Hall, and substantial improvements to the sidewalks, steps, and main drive. So that might seem insignificant, the steps and the stonework outside, but this is the edifice of the building. As you walk up, these are the minute details that you're going to see as you walk up the steps. And I mention this because it's very plain on the outside, the grandeur, so it's just large surfaces. And so for the sidewalks and the steps to all be unison and in good repair is crucial. So now I just want to tell you a little bit about how you can help. So for the past decade, the Memorial Association has devoted tremendous energy and resources to our top-to-bottom restoration of the building. The first such renovation since the memorial was completed nearly a century ago. 100 years, guys. By making a contribution now, you can help prepare the memorial for its landmark century. Your monthly pledge, amount, or one-time gift will be put to work immediately. They have a way to do estate gifting as well, but I wanted to also just tell you the current and upcoming work that they've got planned. So it says, in the next 2 years, our projects include major repairs and important enhancements. The memorial's exterior. After completing major renovation of the higher levels, we continue to work downward. The memorial's portico will receive important repairs in 2020. The LED lighting for the tower will also be completed, allowing for brilliant light effects. The memorial's interior. We will continue to restore and enhance the inside of the memorial. New windows in Memorial Hall will illuminate the space as never before. The memorial grounds. The main drive will be repaved. Plans are being made for granite cladding to be added to the pylons in front of the memorial. So if you've ever been there, the word grandeur is the word. This is an insane undertaking. It is a huge building. You cannot build something of this stature today. I mean, it just doesn't happen. This is something you just don't see anymore. They have levels and benefits that are all explained, but they can do like $25 a month or $100 a month if you're able to do that. Or they have one-time gifts, which are awesome, and that's probably more my speed. But the George Washington National Masonic Memorial is also a 501c3, so it's a nonprofit. Your gift is tax deductible also. So if you get rid of that money, it's like you never made it, and you don't get taxed on it. So consider doing that. For additional information, you'll want to visit their website, which is www.gwmemorial.org. That's GW like George Washington Memorial.org. Or you can contact Sean Iyer. He's the Director of Communications and Development there. His phone number is listed here, and I'll put that in the show notes. And you can email him for the George Washington Memorial information at siyer@gwmemorial.org. So that's S as in Sean, EYER@gwmemorial.org. And you can do all of the gifting there also right on the website. So my thanks to Sean for letting us read a little bit about that in this mail call segment. I really love the memorial. I get out there to see it maybe once or twice a year. Some people never get a chance to go out there, and I get it. It's kind of like a rite of passage, if you will, for a Freemason to be able to go back to the National Masonic Memorial or to go to the House of the Temple. So both of those are out in that area. You're missing out if you haven't tried to go. All right, so the first piece that I wanted to read for you this week is actually from the Midnight Freemasons website. But before I get into it, I did want to mention this really great piece. I'm not going to read it for you this week, but head on over there and check it out. It's called If I Can't Find You on Google, You Must Not Exist: How You Can Effectively Communicate with Every Brother in One Click. It's by Brother Michael Arce, again, Midnight Freemason contributor, and he goes through a number of great bullet points about email tools, websites, how to create promoters, digital resources, basically how to bring your lodge website up to the 21st century, because really your lodge kind of includes the idea of a digital footprint. And if somebody can't find you, then they're just not going to find you there. I mean, it's not like they walk around the streets looking for a lodge. They go to Google, or they go to a Grand Lodge website. And if the Grand Lodge website's not up to par either, that's an issue. But this piece, this brother has actually written for us before on the Midnight Freemasons. It's Brother J. Clint Louie, and I think I read his work before also. His piece that he wrote this time is called Why the Golden Dawn. Now, the Golden Dawn is an interesting order. I will say that. I will also say it was kind of interesting because shortly after this was released, I was watching an episode of Ripper Street, and there was an episode that involved a brief mention of the Golden Dawn, which I thought was just hilarious. But in any case, this piece is by J. Clint Louie, Why the Golden Dawn, and let's get into it right now. Necessity is the mother of invention. In the midst of the Victorian age, a group of English Freemasons founded an esoteric Masonic society called the Societas Rosicruciana in Anglia, or SRIA. The objective of the society was to bring Freemasons of a similar philosophical outlook together, so they may afford aid and encouragement to each other in pursuit of their own studies in the field of philosophy and scholarship in the widest sense. From SRIA bloomed the most influential Western tradition of practical magic called the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. As deeply esoteric as Freemasonry is, and even more so with the various Rosicrucian orders such as SRIA, why did a group of Masons feel the need to create or resurrect a practical Hermetic Kabbalistic society such as the Golden Dawn, and is it still even relevant today? The origins of the Golden Dawn. During the mid-1800s, English Freemasonry was blooming. It was also during this time that an increased interest in theoretical occult practices began to develop. Many Europeans were beginning to grow tired of the typical status quo of orthodox religions, such as Christianity or Judaism, and were turning to spiritualism and other alternative beliefs. While not dropping many of their Christian beliefs, countless Freemasons and Rosicrucians were beginning to show interest in the Hermetic, alchemical, and Kabbalistic science at this time. This enlightenment opened up for more thought, and more thought led to more questions and theories. Whilst the Golden Dawn's roots are firmly sown in Rosicrucianism, the order evolved out of a group of spiritualists, Kabbalists, Freemasons, and Rosicrucians called the Theosophical Society. The Theosophical Society was actually founded in New York City by the legendary Madame Blavatsky and Colonel Henry Olcott. The society was popular among well-educated Americans and Brits, many of which were Freemasons, because it offered an interesting alternative to other major religious beliefs of the time. Theosophy is defined as, quote-unquote, divine wisdom, and combined scientific and religious beliefs that were both spiritually and intellectually satisfying. About a decade later, the Theosophical Society had made its way to London, but its members had suffered a falling out, and eventually the society dissolved. It was quickly replaced with an order called the Hermetic Society. Amongst members of this order was a trio of Freemasons that would go on to create the Esoteric Order of the Golden Dawn. In 1888, a few decades after SRIA was established, three Master Masons who were also members of SRIA created a more practical, magic-based Rosicrucian order called the Esoteric Order of the Golden Dawn, later renamed the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. It was created by Dr. William Westcott, S.L. MacGregor Mathers, and William Woodman, and was based on the Cipher Manuscripts. The Cipher Manuscripts are shrouded in mystery. They were, quote-unquote, discovered by Dr. William Westcott and obtained in Germany from a likely fictional lady called Fräulein Sprengel. According to the Golden Dawn history, the likely origins of the Cipher Manuscripts were SRIA, and they are believed to be written specifically by Kenneth Mackenzie. When Mackenzie passed away in 1886, the papers were obtained from Mackenzie's wife by Dr. Westcott. The original papers were written for a different esoteric group called the Society of Eight, which never fully materialized, and thus Westcott capitalized on this to form his own esoteric Kabbalistic society. The manuscripts primarily contained the ritual outlines and teachings of the order. The manuscripts outlined a system of magically based teachings that took most of the elements and teachings of SRIA and put them into practice, versus only studying the ancient sciences as mainly happened in SRIA. The Golden Dawn included daily practices of rituals, such as the lesser banishing ritual of the pentagram, middle pillar exercises, and meditations, to name a few. Due to the times, the order was very secretive, and their members to this day are obliged to maintain silence of their fellow fraters and sorers' identities. The original and first warranted temple was the Isis Urania No. 3 of the Order of the Golden Dawn in London. Despite good beginnings but questionable origins, the order eventually broke apart in 1903 due to disagreements, primarily involving Mathers and the eccentric occultist Aleister Crowley. The Golden Dawn was survived by groups that share direct initiatory lineage, such as the Stella Matutina, AA, and the Alpha et Omega. These groups operated through the 1930s and sporadically until the early 1970s. Modern relevance of the Golden Dawn. In 1934, Dr. Israel Regardi was initiated into one of the direct offshoots of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn called the Stella Matutina. As noted before, all Golden Dawn temples were closed by the 1970s. However, in 1977, one of the last remaining initiates into the Stella Matutina was Regardi. He came into contact with Charles Chick Cicero and resurrected the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. Cicero is a Master Mason from Florida and a member of the American branch of SRIA called Societas Rosicrucia in Civitatibus Federatus, or the SRICF. York Rite, and other Masonic rites and orders. He is in the grand line for multiple Masonic organizations as well. His wife, Sandra Tabitha Cicero, is also heavily involved in the Golden Dawn. They have written and co-written several books as well as added new material to some of Regardi's earlier works. Their invitational version of the Golden Dawn appears to have the most direct lineage to the original order. The Golden Dawn structure is very similar to that of the Masonic Rosicrucians. It is made up of three orders, 3 degrees, and 12 grades. It utilizes position, or Sephiroth, on the Tree of Life to indicate a member's grade in the order. A couple differences are that there is a probationary period at the beginning, when you are initiated. The initiate's title is Neophyte, or 00, which indicates no steps have been taken on the Tree of Life. The neophyte is required to learn a set of curriculum in order to test and progress into the Outer Order, or Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. It is here the member has the Zealoter grade bestowed upon them, and is then consecrated a full member of the Golden Dawn. The Outer Order consists of the 00 through 47 grades. There is also another probationary period between the Outer Order and the Inner Order called the Portal Grade. The Portal Grade is a part of the second degree of the Order. It is the only grade in this degree, and is neither in the Outer or First Order, or the Inner or Second Order. Similar to the First, Second, and Third Orders, there are three degrees as well, which we will find below. Obtaining the Portal Grade does not ensure entry into the Inner Order. The first number after the grade title indicates the number of steps taken on the Tree of Life, and the second number indicates the number represented on the tree. An example is the Zealoter grade, which is 1-10, meaning the first step on the Tree of Life and the 10th Sephiroth on the tree, Malkuth, as the Sephiroths are numbered seemingly backwards from top to bottom. So, they are First Order, First Degree, / Outer Order of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. Neophyte is 00, Zealoter 110, Theoricus 29, Practicus 38, Philosophus 47. The Second Degree, or the Second Order, Third Degree, Inner Order, is Adeptus Minor 56, Adeptus Major 65, Adeptus Exemptus 74. And the Third Order, Magister Templi, 8-3, Magus, 9-2, and Ipsissimus, 10-1. Freemasonry and the Golden Dawn. Freemasonry was founded by builders whose symbols are applied in architecture and is usually described as a peculiar system of morality, veiled in allegory, and illustrated by symbols. Being more philosophical and theoretical, Freemasonry does lack the practical side that the Golden Dawn offers. Many of the themes, symbols, and verbiages of the Golden Dawn were clearly taken from Freemasonry. The similarities in how they operate are quite clear to most Freemasons, from two pillars and checkered floors, to officer locations, middle path pillar, gnosis or knowledge and light, references of celestial bodies, numbers, and even alchemy. The Golden Dawn and Freemasonry share many commonalities. While there is no documented reason as to why this group of Masons started a magical order such as the Golden Dawn, it is likely due to their progress in Blue Lodge Masonry, and then later the teachings of SRIA. This mastery likely sparked a need to seek more knowledge of ancient sciences and to have a more active application of the teachings. With zodiacal references, alchemical transformation, and self-mastery in SRIA, these gentlemen utilized the cipher manuscripts and knowledge gained from Freemasonry and Rosicrucianism to create a system of magic that was available to men and women who seek it. They felt these magical exercises and other practices gave them growth in their lives and more earthly and spiritual abundance. According to Golden Dawn's senior adept brother Chick Cicero, magic is explained as, quote-unquote, the science and art of causing change in consciousness to occur in conformity with will, using means not currently understood by traditional Western science. By studying these teachings, the Golden Dawn adds some perspective to Freemasonry through the many similarities. For example, the Enochian tablet, which is placed in the north of the temple during the Zealoter grade ritual, or first grade of the Golden Dawn. The north in Masonry is represented by darkness, and we are entered into a Masonic lodge as a candidate for the entered apprentice degree, or first grade. From the north as a statement of perpetual blindness or blackness, you can see the similarities within the tablet. With perspective comes understanding. Many Freemasons join the fraternity as a social or civic outlet, and that is completely fine. However, many others join for that esoteric knowledge that is right within reach, yet out of sight, and often never comes out truly in Freemasonry. The Golden Dawn allows for further understanding of much of the symbolism within our fraternity and a more hands-on approach to working with it. Many symbols that are right before us in the Blue Lodge are often misunderstood or worse yet completely ignored and glossed over. A part of our Masonic journey is the explanation of the three principal supports of Masonry. These supports or pillars represented are wisdom, strength, and beauty. In the Golden Dawn, there are three pillars as well. If approaching from the west, the pillars to the left, which is the north, is represented by severity or strength. The pillar to the right or the south is represented by mercy or wisdom. And the middle pillar is represented by mildness or beauty. Both cases a clear link to Kabbalah, but whereas Freemasonry talks about it, the Golden Dawn takes the step further of working with it. Many Freemasons are members of both orders. From mine and others' experiences, the two orders complement one another well and provide further insight into each order's purpose. The Golden Dawn certainly provides more and further light cast upon our great fraternity. Some Masons that know of the Golden Dawn may believe it to be more of a hogwash than anything, but as a study, it is similar to Rosicrucian colleges such as SRICF or SRIA, and it goes further and adds daily ritual and practice. Many new Masons are joining the fraternity as an outlet from the daily grind. Many new Masons are seeking a place of solace where they can feel a spiritual and philosophical growth. They yearn to find knowledge and mentorship they can't get from non-Masons. A lot of new Masons have glamorized images of gentlemen sitting in suits, talking philosophy, sipping a fine scotch inside of a beautiful mahogany chamber, and then going through very elaborate, well-executed rituals that nobody else understands but themselves. Unfortunately, many new Masons are let down and turn to other orders, such as the SRICF/SRIA, or even further with the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn to explore this vague knowledge that they gained. Connecting the dots. Regular speculative masonry's official inaugural year is 1717, but it is well known that our version of the craft goes back potentially hundreds, even thousands of years before that. It is even believed that it goes back as far as ancient Greece, Babylonian, or even Egyptian times. This is when the two orders unofficially crossed paths. While it wasn't until 1888 that the Golden Dawn was created by three master masons, the essence of the great work sprouted many millennia before this. With elements of Egyptian symbolism and beliefs, it shares much more with Freemasonry than most would realize. It is an outlet and a practical application of the lessons we learn in Freemasonry and an opportunity to delve even further into the esoteric and spiritual sciences, and for many, acts as a path for connecting them to further light. And in this, it is as relevant today, 130 years after its inception, as when it was initially created. Now, a little bonus about this Crowley fellow. Most people familiar with our labor are aware of Aleister Crowley and the stories that have been passed down about him. One question about him that is answered most ambivalently is whether or not Aleister Crowley was a Freemason. As a matter of fact, he was indeed a Freemason. He was so, at least by the standards of the then irregular Grand Lodge de France, in which his Anglo-Saxon Lodge No. 343 belonged to. The Grand Lodge de France became unrecognized by the United Grand Lodge of England on the 29th of June, 1904. Crowley was entered into his lodge on the 8th of October, 1904. While Crowley was never regularly initiated into a Masonic lodge, in 1898, he was initiated into the Outer Order of the original Golden Dawn. There is debate as to whether or not he was ever entered into the Inner Order, or Ruby Rose and Golden Cross. This dispute was primarily due to the ever-present controversy that always seemed to follow Mr. Crowley. His further contributions to the Golden Dawn are his creation of the highly secretive offshoot, AA. Brother J. Clint Louis lives in the greater Rochester, New York area and is a fourth-generation Freemason. He belongs to several Masonic organizations, including a Royal Arch Chapter, SRICF, and New York College in Buffalo. And his working hours, he serves veterans in crisis at the Canandaigua, New York VAMC, as well as serving in his country in the military as a reservist, happily married, and has two kids. So I hope you enjoyed this really kind of interesting look at the Golden Dawn. there's not a lot out there on the Golden Dawn that talks about it in an open and not mystical kind of foggy way. So I have to give Brother J. Clint Louie major props for putting this together. I've never thought to write anything about it myself. Pretty interesting stuff, and our thanks once again.
Happy New Year from the Mid-Atlantic Esoterica. Ticket sales are moving along. We're happy to announce it looks like we're well on our way to another packed house this year in Manassas in 2020. Ticket sales are going so well, in fact, we have only one ticket left for the fun night at Sinistral Brewery, Friday night, June 19th. If you want to join us for some fun, fellowship, and beer, you better act fast before that last ticket is gone. Early bird pricing is still in effect. Our tickets are still on sale for $70, and that deal runs through January the 16th. On January 17th, our regular pricing of $80 will go into effect. Get your tickets now and save yourself a Hamilton. We're also excited to announce our first three speakers for this year's convention, Chuck Dunning, Don McAndrews, and Joseph Wages. If you want to stay up to date on EsotericCon news and announcements, visit our Facebook page, our website, or here at Whence Came You Masonic Podcast. We look forward to seeing you in June.
Many thanks to our brother Kevin Homan for that quick little update. I am sure by now that that last ticket for Sinistral Brewing is gone. But we've got just a few more days to get that awesome pricing, so make sure you go ahead and grab that while you can. All right, now before we move on to the next portion of this week's program, I do want to remind everybody that by the time you're listening to this, open enrollment may be closed or may be extended by a few hours for the Intellectual Linear Progression Program. Make sure you all know when this is happening. It's an online great books program that allows us to learn as our civilization learned by reading the key texts completely and in order. So our fund of knowledge grows just as it did in the West. If you go over to onlinegreatbooks.com, you'll see a video from the founder and brother, Scott Hambrick, and his message about the Great Books program. So I'd urge you all to head on over there, check that out. You can go to wcypodcast.com, hover over our friends, and click on Online Great Books or Intellectual Linear Progression. Again, if you use the promo code WCY and go through our links, they'll give you a percentage off for the first 3 months, which is significant. It's a great cost for what you get. In fact, some of the first textbooks that you get, I mean, you keep these books, and when you get these books, they're yours. The cost for some of those books are exponentially more than the program cost, so it's definitely a win-win. And while we're at it, let's just quickly mention the Franklin's Fortune deck building game. I've said in the past this is a fantastic game. It's recommended for ages 14 and up, but let me tell you that my 10-year-old loved playing it, who just turned 11, and we play it as a family. It's a lot of fun. If you go through our link, again, you'll get a percentage off if you use the promo code WCY at checkout. Upcoming talks. I do have an update. I think I will be speaking at Lodge Vitruvian on January 28th. Topic is to be determined. We'll find out more as the weeks go along. And then after that, I'll be doing a presentation, a brand new one, called The Ark and Freemasonry for Libertyville Masonic Lodge 492 in Libertyville, Illinois, the building that hosts my home lodge, Space Novum. And shortly after that, the Southeastern Masonic Education Symposium. Then various things go on from there. So if you're interested to see where I'll be doing some talks, again, wcypodcast.com, hover over presentation schedule, and you'll see some links to the different topics that I already cover and any upcoming talks that I'm doing. We had a little addition to the Chicago Masonicon website. We've added a blog. Now, the hope for this blog isn't to like bog you down with one more thing to read every Monday or something, but I did want to read you the blog post that we put up. This will be a blog that we have out, and periodically we'll update with things related to conventions and the Masonic Education Symposium experience, as it were. So again, the piece that we sent out to all of our email subscribers, and we put it out on the social media as well, was the benefits of the convention approach. So what I did to gather the data for the benefits of the convention approach was actually to reach out to some of some great guys on
social media, some of whom I know intimately and some others that I don't, but that I have met or interacted with, and hold some great stature in terms of educators in their state, in their areas, and I wanted to get their unsolicited, raw response. So, here you go. The Benefits of the Convention Approach by Chad Kopensky, Kevin Homan, Robert Marshall, Nathan Tweedy, and Michael Jarzabek. Introduction by Robert Johnson. It was almost 7 years ago when I attended my first Masonic convention. It was held at a Masonic temple in Westchester, Illinois. The lodge was called Pleiades No. 478. They're still around, still doing amazing things. The speakers that day were great. Robert Hurd of the Initiatic Experience, Charles Harper Sr., Freemasonry in Black and White, Anthony Mangelli, Selected Symbols of the Entered Apprentice Degree, were just a few of the speakers that they had that day. It was like a sparkler in the dead of night. A small beacon of hope. Education. Could it be? It was, and it felt so right. Fast forward a few years, and a lodge in Attleboro, Massachusetts, Ezekiel Bates, decided to throw a convention, the Masonicon. Admittedly, I didn't know about it its first year, but the second year I went, and the third year, and so on. Today, there are a mass of Masonic education conventions happening around the United States. The larger ones, would you believe all the organizers are in touch and work together? We do. Masonicon in Attleboro, Mass., Esotericon in Virginia, Texas Masonicon, Cooperstown Masonicon in New York, the South Pasadena Masonic Lodge Masonicon in California, Camp Masonry in Ohio, and the Southeastern Masonic Education Symposium, which is in Florida. And yes, Masonicon Chicago. It's all about Masonic education, the fellowship, and the propagating of the mystic art. I reached out to some men who've been involved in planning Masonicon events and some other highly respected brothers, and I asked them, what's so great about these Masonicons? And here's what they said. Robert Jackson, past master of Milford Lodge in Massachusetts. I've been seeing more and more Masonic-oriented conventions popping up over the last few years. I'm fortunate enough to have been able to attend Ezekiel Bates several times, the original Masonicon in Attleboro. And I look forward to it every year. The Masonic swag is nice, but what I really appreciate the most are the presentations and discussions that follow. The knowledge and friendship I've attained through these events are the brightest lights in my Masonic journey. And I can't wait for the next one. Chad Kopensky, past master, director for Masonic Education at the Grand Lodge of Ohio, says, I think people forget that Freemasonry is a means, not an end. Our ritual, our business meetings, our charity, everything we do as Masons is a means to discovering more about your world and finding deeper and more personal connections with our higher power, with our history, with our community, but most importantly, with our fellow man. C.S. Lewis said that friendship is born at the moment when one person says to another, What? You too? I thought I was the only one. Every Masonic symposium is filled with these moments, when brethren from different jurisdictions, different walks of life, different backgrounds find meaningful and valuable connections. It is Masonry, as it is intended, a means to discover that you are not alone, that more connects us than divides us, and that there is more in heaven and earth than you have ever dreamt of. As I progress in Masonry, I come to find myself subscribing to what I call a Traveling Wilburys concept of Masonic symposia. The Traveling Wilburys were a musical group formed when George Harrison got into a studio with Roy Orbison, Tom Petty, Bob Dylan, and Jeff Lynne, just to see what would happen. The result was an influential and genre-defying album that was a critical and commercial success. When it comes to Masonic symposia, I figure that if you get enough really cool and interesting people in a room, that something incredibly cool and interesting is going to happen. Kevin Homan, past master, organizer for Esotericon. Masonic symposiums and conferences have many values and virtues to them, but coming from a Masonic conference with a single goal in mind, the teaching of esoteric knowledge, I find that we are uniting brethren with an interest in esoterics and giving them something their lodges and grand lodges aren't. In our case, we were actually told by someone within our grand lodge that we should be careful. Our grand lodge is traditional, but you know what? every brother from our grand jurisdiction came up and thanked us at the end of the day for providing them something their lodges and our grand lodges don't. Something someone very senior implied isn't of interest to the brethren of our jurisdiction. I find that in this respect, Masonic conferences and symposiums are of great benefit to our membership. Michael Jarzabek, past Junior Grand Warden and current Chairman of the Lodges of Instruction for the Grand Lodge of Massachusetts. The age-old conflict in Freemasonry is the proper balance of fraternalism, education, and service. While primarily focused on education, Masonic symposiums provide an excellent opportunity for a Mason to experience all three. Due to lack of Masonic educational experiences throughout the country, educationally minded brothers often travel great distances at personal expense to obtain what they desire. An unintended consequence of this is the building of relationships across jurisdictions which encourage the free exchange of ideas and resources. Few Masonic activities have proven to provide as much value to as broad of an audience as the Masonic Symposium. Brother Nathan Tweedy, Knights of St. Andrew. At a recent stated meeting, a Mason closing in on earning his 60-year apron approached me with a book and said, "I think this is a book you would really enjoy. I just started it recently." He then presented me with Manly P. Hall's The Secret Teachings of All Ages. My heart broke. This brother, as he had been in the craft over half a century, and was only now learning of this seminal work to esoteric study. As a fraternity, we failed him. I was lucky enough to get my hands on this book within the first few years of my Masonic journey, all because of Google search and a trip to neighboring Massachusetts. As a newly raised Mason, I found meetings were not meeting my needs. I was unaware of what I was looking for in Masonry, but knew it was more than approving minutes and paying bills. One evening, after a symposium was hosted at my employer, the idea struck to use my favorite search engine to see if I could find a Masonic symposium or conference that could help me find what I was looking for. A few months later, I was in my car headed to Attleboro, Massachusetts for what would be a watershed moment in my Masonic life, MasonicCon. While several of the topics discussed were far above my head, and I disagreed with what some other speakers were speaking about, I knew I found what I wanted in Masonry. Education. Another unexpected benefit from attending MasonicCon were the friendships and connections made. The friendships made at MasonicCon made it necessary for me to return again the next year, this time as a speaker. After speaking, I had many invitations to speak at other lodges in various jurisdictions. Little did I know, traveling is the true pleasure in the Masonic world. Through my friendships and connections, I became more knowledgeable in Masonry and found where to find more light. Soon, podcasts, Facebook groups, research, and observant lodges became places I could turn to. I have since become a member of an Allied Masonic Degrees chapter, but I cannot help but wonder if the invitation ever would have come if not for that first visit to Attleboro's MasonicCon. It is without a doubt that had I not gone to a MasonicCon my first year as a Mason, I would not be as active in Masonry as I am today. Robert Marshall, past master of Waco No. 92 in Texas and the deputy director of the Kansas Lodge of Research, says, "Masons have gathered with the goal of exchanging new ideas and owning or replacing old ones since as far back as can be traced. Transcending divisions that often separate men in other realms of society, the Freemason is encouraged and trained in the skill of discourse regarding arts, sciences, and the enormous world of possibilities promised by the study and practice thereof. Today, we are in the midst of a Renaissance era for this kind of rigorous sharpening of one's main values and ideals against those of another. The new era is being spurred onward by the explosive emergence of MasonicCons, symposiums, and even festive boards, at all of which an open and enriching environment is being offered for Masonic self-development and learning. Meaningful discussion of history, esotericism, fraternalism, and the many ways in which these great areas of Masonry intersect is what you can expect when you attend one of these events. The only question that remains to be answered is, why wouldn't you want to do that?" So there you have some of those quotes from the brothers. I finished it off with asking this, so why wouldn't you? Why will you go? The quips from the above brothers were not edited. I asked them for raw responses, and that's what I received. Their words mark the importance of Masonic education and the benefits of putting on and attending the MasonicCon events. Of course, we have these large-scale Masonic conferences where you can freely traverse the event, watch the speakers you want, and shop at the vendors during the speakers you may not be so interested in, where you can count on immense programming and effort. Yes, you should travel. Yes, you should come. You'll find on the MasonicCon Chicago homepage, about halfway down, is a link to all the big conventions. Find the nearest one and look into going. That's my recommendation. And please remember, brothers, although these conventions are happening, nothing is stopping you from putting something on. A one-day symposium with three or four speakers and a dinner? You can do it. And I hope to see you soon. You can get your executive tickets at MasonicCon Chicago, or you can get general admission tickets there also. And I hope you guys check it out, www.masonicconchicago.com. All right, now before we go any further into the educational portion of this week's episode, I would love to hear the brand new Masonic Minute with illustrious Brother Harrison.
In 2001, Harvard professor and political scientist Robert D. Putnam published a book entitled Bowling Alone. For a time, the book was all the rage in membership-based organizations as it attempted to explain via an abundance of numbers, charts, and graphs the reasons for and effects of the decline of social interaction in our society. The book became less the rage when readers found out it offered more on the whys and wherefores and less on how to reverse the trend. This trend, I might add, has continued its downward spiral since the book came out. Putnam used the following bowling analogy to illustrate his premise. While the number of people who are participating in the sport of bowling has increased, really? If he says so. Participation in organized bowling leagues has declined. We are therefore bowling alone. So let's channel this over to Freemasonry. While interest in Freemasonry has increased, if I say so, participation in organized Freemasonry has declined. I got to thinking about this while reading an article by Robert Johnson entitled, What If We Actually Did Masonry? In it, Right Worshipful Brother Robert wondered what would happen if, instead of running business-saturated lodge meetings like we do now, we used the bulk of each meeting for Masonic education. The more I read, the more I kept thinking attendance would go down even more. Fortunately, Robert backed me up on that when he said, what would happen if we all changed the order of business so that Masonic education came right after the opening? What would happen if we spent 20, 30 minutes, dare I say an hour, on a topical presentation complete with questions and answers with discussion from the brothers? The chances are we would lose a lot of members by doing this. Part of the issue is our society has become so over the top. Back in the day, you could go to a rock concert and watch the band simply set up and rock on. Today, for the attention span challenge, that same band on tour has to have flash, pyrotechnics, and videos behind it while it plays. We expect so much more. The other issue is that our boring meetings compete with the likes of 70-inch big screen TVs with practically any movie ever made available anytime we want it. Add to that the constant buzz of activity on our smartphones, which sometimes includes 24/7 availability for our jobs and, oh yeah, the small matter of our family activities. You want to match all that against a lengthy discussion of a point within a circle? without pyrotechnics? With all the activity and excitement happening around us, we stay home glued to our cell phones and have less real social interaction. We bowl alone. So what could we do to stem this tide? Easy. We could get rid of all TVs, smartphones, the internet, and go back to the time when our grandfathers had nothing to do for social interaction and entertainment but go to a lodge meeting. And by the way, do you think Granddad's Lodge spent an hour on Masonic education? Well, we can't go back, can we? But we can take advantage of what we have. If you want Masonic education, go get it. We don't have to depend on our lodges for it. And more than Granddad, who had to borrow a book or go to the library, we have the world at our fingertips. Listen to podcasts like Whence Came You or the Masonic Roundtable. Read Masonic blogs like the Midnight Freemasons. Do some research and write an article or two. Who knows where this can lead? Maybe, and I know this is radical, one evening you can take your brothers by surprise, stand up, and present what you've learned in lodge. Be careful. You should probably start out as if you're announcing a chili supper, then ease into your real purpose for speaking. The fact is, if we don't get a lot of what we want in lodge, the fix starts with each of us individually. It's just the way things are today. If we want something other than business meetings and bean dinners, the hubbub, toys, and distractions of modern-day society are backing us into a corner and forcing us to go Freemasoning alone. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
All right, holy cow. Super awesome Masonic Minute this week, not because he quoted me, but it was cool. I agree wholeheartedly with Steve in his assertions. If you want it, go get it. There's just no other way about it. Nobody's going to give it up so readily, and Steve wrote about it in an article for the Midnight Freemasons. Masonic education served up on a silver platter, and guess who wanted to use it? That's right. It just doesn't catch on unless you bring it. So if you love the Masonic Minute, check out the YouTube channel and check out Steve's book on our bookstore right on the website. You can click right through and pick up those books. It's a great resource. Thank you to illustrious Brother Steve for his constant work and love of the fraternity. He inspires us all. All right, I wanted to finish this week up with a two-part series from the Masonic Philosophical Society, tagline, Recapturing the Spirit of the Renaissance. If you have not been to the philosophicalsociety.org, I definitely encourage you to go. It is a cooperative effort from many different Masonic organizations. These come from all over the world, and they've got some great articles. And I'll make sure I put links to these two articles in the show notes. So the article is titled Dharma, Duty, and Freemasonry, Part 1, by Elaine Polonius Pellin, published November 25th, 2019, so just a few months ago. And she says, "We all have duties which we are responsible for in life, although some may not ascribe these responsibilities with that term. We are responsible for the well-being of families and our own self-improvement. Many of us would say that we have a duty of service to our community or even to humanity as a whole. Duty is an important concept in Freemasonry and can be viewed or defined in two basic ways. One, a moral or legal obligation, a responsibility, commitment, or allegiance. Or two, a task or action that someone is required to perform. The first definition speaks to a higher concept, an attitude or reverence or respect in the cause of fidelity. The second definition is more concrete and delineates a specific action one is required to perform. What duties do we owe in life? And do these duties circumscribe our personal dharma? What is dharma? Dharma is an integral concept in many Eastern religions, such as Hinduism, Buddhism, and Sikhism. In Hinduism, Dharma has been defined as a spiritual law which governs the necessary conduct of each individual. While there is no direct one-word translation in the English language, Dharma can be described as duty, morality, virtues, or calling. A quote from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 1.4.14: "Nothing is higher than Dharma. The weak overcomes the stronger by Dharma as over a king. Truly that Dharma is the truth. Therefore, when a man speaks the truth, they say, he speaks the Dharma. And if he speaks Dharma, they say he speaks the truth. For both are one." Dharma signifies behaviors that are in accord with Ritta, the order that upholds the universe. In the Vedic religion, Ritta, or order, rule, or truth, is the principle of nature order which regulates and coordinates the operation of the universe and everything within it. Those ordinances or life paths which uphold Ritta are referred to as Dharma, and the action of the individual in relation to those ordinances is referred to as karma. Ritta, as an ethical principle, is linked with the notion of cosmic retribution. A central concept of the Rig Veda, an important Hindu scripture, is that created beings fulfill their true natures when they follow the path set for them by the ordinances of Ritta. And failing to follow those ordinances was thought to be responsible for the appearance of various forms of calamity and suffering. Committing one's actions to the governance of Ritta, referred to as its Dharma, was therefore understood as an imperative in ensuring one's own well-being. Karma, or action, refers to the works one performs which can occur either in congruence with or in opposition to Dharma, and thus to Ritta, and which are posited to stand in a causal relationship to the pains and pleasures one experiences in life. Described also as a law of moral causation, karma places the responsibility for one's life on the shoulders of the individual. Thus, an individual's circumstances in life, calamity, or fortune are considered the outcome of that person's past actions. Determining one's duty, aspects of Dharma. There are aspects of Dharma that apply to everyone, universal Dharma, for instance, and aspects that are specific to each individual personal Dharma. In order to be in accordance with Ritta, one first needs to cultivate certain universal moral principles, including ideas of perseverance, reasoning, patience, wisdom, self-control, truthfulness, purity, refraining from theft, control of one's senses, and absence of anger. Such moral principles are part of the universal application of Dharma, which apply to every individual and is referred to as the Sadharana Dharma. This is augmented by person's specific Dharma, which is impacted by three factors: the gunas, which are individual tendencies, the ashrams, stages of life, and three, Sayad Dharma, one's personal calling. The gunas, from the Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 4, 16, 17, verse: "What is action? What is inaction? Even the wise are hereby perplexed. It is needful to discriminate action, unlawful action, and inaction. Mysterious is the path of action." The concept of gunas is based on the idea that all human beings have a mixture of three tendencies: sattva, rajas, and tamas. Sattva is a tendency toward truth and purity, rajas is a tendency toward action, and tamas is tendency toward inaction, obstruction, or even ignorance. Gunas, or individual tendencies, are expanded upon by their application to the varnas, or groups within the Hindu social structures. Based on the recognition of the difference in individual tendencies and sort all members into one of four categories, thus each group follows different life paths and is assigned different duties. The varnas, or groups within society. Varnas are groups within society including Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras. These groups within society can be explored in the actual article, but to give you a quick overview, the Brahmins are typically your priests, scholars, and teachers. Kshatriyas are your rulers, warriors, and statesmen. Vaishyas are the businessmen, bankers, merchants, and farmers. And Shudras, which are custodians, laborers, and service providers. And each one of these has like four attributes that take you through what they're good at, what they're cast in, and everyone kind of fits into these four castes. So, carrying on with the article, These classifications were once the basis of the caste system in India and other nations. Based on the caste or class someone was born into, these classifications cemented that person's opportunities and social status. This is no longer the case in India, but it does highlight the past subjection of certain people based on their circumstances at birth. This raises the interesting question, is one's future predetermined at birth? Are we born with certain qualities or gunas which influence our life path, duties, or dharma? And we're just going to go right into part two, Dharma, Duty, and Freemasonry, part two, from Mahatma Gandhi in 1946. Quote, Hindu dharma is like a boundless ocean teeming with priceless gems. The deeper you dive, the more treasures you find. End quote. In the previous post of this series, I discussed the concepts of duty and dharma. Here we continue to explore the factors in determining one's dharma, dharma's theological foundation, and address the Masonic connection of these terms. The ashrams are stages of life. The next factor in determining one's dharma is to consider the stage of life one is currently in, youth or the student, adulthood, which is the householder, middle age, which is the transition away from worldly focus on the material, and the old age, devotion and isolation. These stages are as follows. Brahmacharya, which is life of preparation, responsibilities as a student. Your duty is to learn and gain skills. Grihastha is life of the householder with family and other social roles. Its duty is to focus on family and building up material wealth. Vanprastha, life of reflection, is retired from the past actions, transitioning from worldly occupations and affairs. The duty is to contribute back to society with intellectual, spiritual, or material wealth, and spending time furthering spiritual development. Then there is the sannyasa, life of renunciation, giving away all property, becoming a recluse in devotion to spiritual matters. The duty lies in meditation, spiritual study, and worship. Note that individuals move through these stages on unique basis. Some skip stages entirely, and some never reach the later stages. This is part of one's siddharma, or calling in life. An individual's calling, or life purpose. For example, sannyasa is a form of asceticism, and is represented by a state of disinterest and detachment from material life with the purpose of spending one's life in peaceful, love-inspired, simple, spiritual life. Siddhartha, or Buddha, walked away from the material life to follow the path of sannyasa, similar to a monk or nun. Individuals may take this path after Brahmacharya and skip the two intermediate stages. This means that what is right action for one individual is wrong conduct for another. A soldier's duty may require the individual to kill someone, but murder is incorrect conduct for a banker or teacher. Dharma and the Bhagavad Gita. There is a 2,000-year-old treatise called the Bhagavad Gita, or the Song of God, which is considered the world's greatest scripture on Dharma. A smaller section of the larger epic work called the Mahabharata. The 700 verses of the Bhagavad Gita are arranged in a conversational format between two main speakers, Krishna and Arjuna. Dharma is the first word in the Bhagavad Gita. The great work begins when the blind old king, Dhritarashtra, asks his secretary, Sanjaya, about the battle that was to take place at the field of Dharma. In the name of the Dharma, Arjuna, a great warrior and general of the Pandavas, argues for nonviolence by assuming that to attack and kill so many leading men, nearly all of whom were fathers and husbands, will destabilize the important families and communities for which these men are responsible. The families themselves are vital to the peace and virtue of society. Lord Krishna, God and Arjuna's spiritual master, does not at once address Arjuna's argument about Dharma, as we would expect in typical debate. Rather, the Lord first reveals to Arjuna in 20 verses, beginning with chapter 2, 11 through 30, the eternal nature of the soul. Then, the Lord comes back to the topic of Dharma to show that it is Arjuna who is neglecting his Dharma by refusing to fight. Quote, and even considering your personal Dharma as well, it is not right for you to hesitate. There is nothing better for a warrior than a fight based on Dharma. Bhagavad Gita 2:31. Here we find that Dharma itself is meant to assist the real goal of life, understanding the eternal soul and its relationship to the supreme soul, Krishna. Lord Krishna concludes this brief reference to Dharma as one's personal duty by saying, quote, "Now, if you do not execute this battle, then having given up on your personal Dharma and reputation, you shall incur sin." Bhagavad Gita 2:33. Throughout the rest of the volume, Lord Krishna speaks of Dharma in terms of his own teaching of spiritual knowledge and not directly in response to Arjuna's argument about Dharma as ordinary religious and moral practices. Krishna's next reference to Dharma reinforces his earlier statement that Arjuna must perform his own Dharma and not neglect it in the name of Dharma. Arjuna can neither protect Dharma nor keep himself on the spiritual platform if he abandons the duties born of his nature. Krishna explains, quote, "One's own Dharma performed imperfectly is better than another's Dharma well performed. Destruction in one's own Dharma is better, for to perform another's Dharma leads to danger." End quote. Bhagavad Gita 3:35. Thus, the complete picture begins to emerge. An effective government must not only create laws but enforce them as well. Similarly, the Supreme Lord brings forth his law of Dharma when obedience to his law collapses and human beings instead propagate their own illicit law. The Lord descends to protect the good citizens of his kingdom, vanquish the outlaws who practice adharma, and re-establish in human society the prestige and power of the will. We can now see why Arjuna's initial argument that to obey Lord Krishna and fight would go against Dharma cannot be correct. Dharma is nothing but the Lord's will. For Arjuna, to fight, then, is true Dharma. Thus, Lord Krishna starkly contrasts the ordinary Dharma of the Vedas with this Dharma, which is pure devotional service to Krishna. Krishna concludes the important ninth chapter by showing the power of this Dharma, unalloyed Krishna consciousness, to purify and save the soul. It is simply on the strength of devotion to Krishna that even a man of terrible conduct quickly becomes devoted to Dharma. So in this manner, all human beings can approach duty or Dharma in the same manner. If all individuals seek the divine and follow the leading which springs forth, the different rules or requirements of individual Dharma become a single path. Dharma and Freemasonry. Duty is an important concept in Freemasonry, similar to a code of conduct by which individuals should mold their character. Moreover, members are instructed to do their duty regardless of the consequence. Since Masonry is an institution founded on the highest virtues and principles of morality, Masonic duties are in harmony with proper conduct and the laws of their country. Some of these duties include to think high, to speak truth, to do well, to be tolerant to others, to search after truth, and to practice liberty under the law, fraternal equality, justice, and solidarity. Moreover, Freemasonry calls on its members to follow an individual path while also working together to uplift humanity. The craft also inspires the cultivation of similar virtues of those considered part of the Dharma system, such as patience, fortitude, and prudence. For some individuals, I posit that Freemasonry could be viewed as a major component or the culmination of that brother's individual Dharma. What do you think? So that's the end of this piece. Again, I would urge you to go over and check out both pieces and reread them at your will. I'll put links to them both up on the show notes, but also they will be available in a longer PDF that will have all of the articles we read in a single PDF document. Now, I know it takes a little while to get from part one to the end, the last two paragraphs of this last piece, to talk about why it coincides with Freemasonry. But what's actually interesting is there's a ton of similitudes between the Hindu religion, Hinduism, and Freemasonry as a system. They really both are right along the same path. But more so, I know we restrict in Lodge the discussion of religion, but what shouldn't be really discouraged is to know about a religion, to know what that religion entails. So hopefully this gave you a little taste of that also, and maybe you want to go ahead and read the Bhagavad Gita, for instance. I myself have a couple copies of this book. I think the one that right now I'm going through is the one that was done by the Theosophical Society writer Annie Besant, which is a pretty decent translation, if I do so say so myself. There are certain words within the Hindu text that are very difficult to say because it's not part of the normal English vernacular. specific to sounds. You know, like when we have Hebrew and we have certain sounds that are distinct there, there are certain sounds that are distinctly Roman, distinctly German, and there are sounds that are distinctly Hindu when we're reading. And I don't know the exact pronunciation, so I do have to apologize if I messed any of that up. But nonetheless, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. We're back, and I know this was a longer episode, so is this indicative of what's to come? Maybe we have some longer episodes, maybe we have some shorter episodes here or there, but I think by integrating the new segment of Mail Call and really going over some of this other things, I've been instructed by many of the producers, fellows, and contributors not to be scared of show lengths. Most of you who do listen to podcasts listen to these hour, 2 hour long podcasts. I don't know if I could ever do that, but if a show's about an hour, it's probably okay, I guess. So I hope you guys enjoyed once more. Please consider, again, supporting the WCY Podcast. Go to WCYpodcast.com. Click on Support the Show. Read all about how to do that. You can do it through supporting the show, the shop, and through our friends. You can go to the bookstore. The bookstore is the new thing. So if you go to the bookstore, we remapped it all. And actually, all of the books by the people who have been on the show are here. You can click on them, and also some recommended reading and listening that are books that I personally recommend to anybody who is a student of the royal art or anything mystic. And what you'll notice is that all of the books we had before are there, and all of these new recommended reading and listening lists are here also. But what's cool is it takes you directly to where they are on Amazon.com, and for the first time ever, you can shop through Amazon through these links, and Amazon kicks us a few pennies, literally pennies, but it's something. So if you're going to buy some books, help us out. Just really quickly, the recommended reading list, what does it contain? Well, these are books that I thought have helped me and that I really enjoy. So this is my personal reading list and my personal recommendations. And that does include two books I was involved with. So first is Freemasons for Dummies by Chris Hodapp, A Mason's Words by Bob Davis. Of course, we have It's Business Time there, both in audio and regular book format. The Laudable Pursuit by Knights of the North, both audible and regular print book are linked. The Meaning of Masonry by Wilmshurst, Master's Word by Plumer, Symbolism, A Treatise on the Soul of Things by Milton A. Pottinger, the Bhagavad Gita, it's one of the translations, The Lost Gospel of Judas Iscariot, which is a wonderful book and assisted me in understanding more of the Gnostic viewpoint of things. Then we have God's Debris, which is a thought experiment by Scott Adams. He's the guy who did Dilbert. It's a wonderful, cool little philosophical book he did. And, of course, the Secret Teachings of All Ages by Manly P. Hall. I will say that the copy of Secret Teachings that I link here is a smaller tome, and it's super thick because I had to condense everything. It's not the university edition. If you could afford it, don't buy this $15/$20 version of Secret Teachings. Go to the university edition. Go to the Philosophical Research Society's website. Buy the university edition for, like, I think $120 it is. You will not be disappointed. That's the one to buy. No other edition even comes close. But this small edition will fit in your bookshelf just fine, and you'll have it for a good reference. And if you really need it, this is the one to get. I challenge you to find a review of a copy of The Secret Teachings of All Ages by Manly P. Hall on Amazon that doesn't have somebody complaining about not having color pictures or the size or whatever. If you're an author, did you write a book? There's a little form here you can fill out on WCYpodcast.com and tell me your name, your email, your phone number, give me the title and the synopsis of your completed book, any other notes, and send me a link and we'll get you on the show to talk about the book. That's it. I really appreciate you guys. I hope you have an amazing new year. We've got lots of stuff happening this year. I'll be presenting, I think, like as I mentioned before, I'll be at Lodge Vitruvian 676 at the end of January. So January 28th, I believe, is the date. And the meeting will be around 7 o'clock, but I think I'm speaking over the festive board. I'm going to be doing the Esoterics 101 with an emphasis on how that connects to men in the 21st century and why they seek it, why they seek the esoteric, and why Freemasonry connects them to those things, and also how that
assists men in their journey to become better. Again, thank you so much to all of our supporters, contributors, our producers, our fellows, everybody who's going through links and all that stuff to help support us. We can't do it without you. Also, please don't forget, get your tickets early because you're helping me out in the planning for MasonicCon Chicago. If you want to go, buy your tickets sooner than later so that I can get the ball rolling on things we need to make this a great conference and have no hiccups. Get on the email list. We're going to be sending out, I think what we're going to do is have you design the coin. We've got a couple designs. We'll let you all pick which one is the most popular through votes and things. It'll be really cool. And if you want to help us design the MasonicCon Chicago coin, you need to get on the email list. So with that, have an amazing week. We'll talk to you all next week. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.